The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 26, 2025. This is the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another sunny and beautiful day in Auburn, Alabama, as we get one day closer to the start of Auburn football, college football, and beyond. So much to get to on today's show. We're diving in and giving you our full Baylor preview. Everything you need to know about what the Bears were last year, what they are this year, what Auburn could see on Friday night in Waco. We're giving you that. We've got great guests and a whole lot more. We'll tell you about it as we go. Christian, happy Tuesday, sir. How are you?
Happy Tuesday. Doing well. Yeah, you mentioned a day closer to Auburn football. We're a day closer to Auburn High and Lee Scott Academy getting back on the football field with those games on Thursday. We got to do our best not to throw off our mental calendar with high school on Thursday, Auburn University on Friday, and then you have Saturday, Sunday, and Monday college football games. It's going to be fantastic. You have Thursday night football games as well. Just make it through the middle of the week. Make it the hump day, and then you get to wake up and there's college football and there's high school football as well. You mentioned it here in hour number one. We're diving into two different teams that not everybody knows a whole lot about if you don't pay too much attention to it. We're talking Baylor, and Tuesdays at 2:30 means we get to continue our high school football coverage as well, and we're able to sit down with the defensive coordinator for Lee Scott Academy, Coach Jacob Osment, and get his thoughts on the week one victory and look ahead to the short week as the Warriors take on the Indians of Lochapoca over at Judd Scott Field here in just a couple of days. Also, some news in the kicking unit, in the special teams unit, as seems like there continue to be more questions. And how much confidence do we have in some of the other guys? And what do we have to do with this news as you continue to work your way into week one? All of that coming up here in a jam-packed hour number one.
Yep, and so the time to get in on the phone lines would be now. If you have comments or questions about this Baylor team, we will do our best to answer those. And again, the text box would be the best way to hop in as well in terms of just quick hitters for this Baylor squad. You can give us a call, though right now is the time to do it. 334-321-1390. 334-321-1390. And then the text box is always open at 334-784-1067. We have an interview coming up at 3 o'clock that we're excited for. Also a guest, a returning guest in hour number two for an SEC rival as well. And somebody did text in the text box. Looks like this was earlier and just sent a reminder to us today at 784-1067 asking if we are doing an SEC college pick'em again this year. Unfortunately, not officially through the website that we have had at ESPNAU.com in the past. The service that we have used no longer exists, and unfortunately, our promotions department was unable to find anything that was good, basically good enough to use for tracking and keeping score, giving away prizes and things like that. So not officially, unfortunately, but we appreciate people asking and hope that you can understand, and we do look to do something like that in the future. So we're going to be making our picks on the show, and so we'll have some sort of a way for you guys to be involved that way. But
we can make it, we can make an unofficial one,
yeah,
possibly
something
as well.
Yeah,
maybe
something like
maybe
that.
Maybe drop the password or something from a website for a pick'em later on in the week.
We'll find something like that. But, yeah, not the official SEC football challenge. I know there's a lot of people. We've had a ton of phone calls and things about it. So it is what it is. It's upsetting, but that's just how things go sometimes. And so hopefully we can get something back up and running for this time next year. But let's dive into this Baylor team, the program and the team that Auburn will be playing come Friday night in Waco, Texas. And the question is, what are they going to look like come Friday night? What is this team for Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears in 2025? And it's so fascinating to me to look back at the short career of Dave Aranda and his time at Baylor, where halfway through last year, maybe a month into last year, they were talking about firing this guy. Yeah. Because at one point, he was 3-17 against FBS opponents as the head coach of the Baylor Bears. And they had started horrifically bad. They had dropped their first couple of games. I think they were 2-4 to start the season last year. And it was, man, maybe this wasn't a great hire when he was the defensive coordinator at LSU. Maybe he wasn't the best option as the head coach. And then all of a sudden, whatever the heck decided to happen, Baylor caught fire and became one of the hottest teams in college football down the stretch. They won several games in a row, losing coming up short in a bowl game against LSU that we'll talk about. But overall, there are high expectations for Baylor in 2025.
Yeah, there is. In 2021, they went 12-2 and won the Big 12. They went all the way up to the AP number 5 team in the country, made it up to the number 7th ranked team in the college football playoff. That's actually where they finished, and they won the Sugar Bowl that year. That was 2021. You follow that up with a 6-7 2022, a 3-9 2023, and then, yeah, you mentioned the start of 2024. You were sitting there scratching your head as a Baylor fan going, I think you're usually supposed to be working in a positive trajectory. Right now, you're working in the exact opposite. You've already hit that peak, and you're now working your way down and very, very fast. But then Sawyer Robertson happened. He felt comfortable in the offense. They changed up their identity just a little bit, really became a team that relied on the chunk play, whether that was from the passing game or from the run game that we'll dive into. Finish it 8-5, finish the regular season 8-4 before you mention that bowl loss to end the season.
And so the question then becomes, okay, well, they were a pretty good team. They were 8-4, and they go into that bowl game against LSU. And it's unfortunately one of those bowl games that to the outside folk, it didn't mean a whole lot because it wasn't a college football playoff game, and we've had the discussions of where bowl season is heading because of that. But 2-8-4 teams with Garrett Nussmeier on one side and then this Baylor offense that had just come alive with Sawyer Robertson on the other. And it wasn't the offense that was a concern, at least going into that game, and you get into it and it was, man, the defense can't stop anybody. LSU, you go back and look at that, and I was watching some of the highlights this morning, going back and kind of reminding myself and doing a deeper dive on this team. Man, LSU threw the ball all over the yard against that Baylor squad. They were up 28-7 like that.
Well, yeah, there were 800 passing yards in this game.
28-7 was the score at halftime. Heck, that was the score with like 2 minutes to go in the third, and it was, man, this LSU defense that hasn't been all that great has been good in this game, and Baylor's offense can't do crap, and all of a sudden, here come the Bears. And you saw the potential, right? The peak of what Baylor's offense could be coming down the stretch in that bowl game.
Yeah, 17 points scored in the second quarter. A lot of those points scored late, as you mentioned, and then 7 in the third, 7 in the fourth. They drop it 44-31. And when you go and look at the Baylor offensive side of the football, yeah, this bowl game kind of speaks for what Baylor was as a team last year. I mean, you averaged a bunch of yards through the air. What was it? You averaged, where was it? 440 yards per game.
Mm-hmm.
You averaged 290 of those through the air. You averaged 150 yards on the ground, and that's kind of the way that this was. You weren't able to run the football, but Sawyer Robertson threw for 445 yards, had two touchdowns and an interception, went 30 of 51, yes, for 445 yards in that game. The offense did everything that they could to try and keep up with the Tigers scoring, but the defense was what let them down, and you feel like that was how everything kind of crumbled in the very end with this Baylor team.
And so then you look in, it's like, okay, now you ask the question, What are they going to be this year? You asked, all right, what were they last year? What did they look like the last time we saw them? And now it's, what are they going to be this year? Sawyer Robertson's still their quarterback. They bring many of their receivers back from last year. They hit the transfer portal extremely hard, especially on the defensive side of the football. They went and got starters on the defensive side, especially in the secondary, for a defense that clearly needed the help.
Yeah, they went and got a lot of the, yes, as you mentioned, a lot of starters at the P4 level on the defensive side of the football, went out and got some of the top players from the G5 level on offense, whether that was certain receivers, offensive linemen, or running back in there as well. We'll talk about, again, what they were able to do in the transfer portal here coming up in just a little bit. But, yeah, Sawyer Robertson, still the guy at the helm. He was one of college football's best statistically last year. He was 7th. In the overall quarterback rating, threw for over 3,000 yards, had a 28-8 touchdown to interception ratio. He threw 5 picks in the first quarters of games, only threw 3 in the other 3 games, or the other 3 quarters every single game. And so when you're diving into those stats, obviously, okay, if you're Auburn, don't you dare let him get settled in the first quarter. You continue to do every single thing that you can to keep him uncomfortable, because it's almost like a pitcher, right? You get out of the first inning, and sometimes that's the Achilles heel. You give up 2 in the first, now all of a sudden you've settled down, and all of a sudden you look at it 4 innings later, and he's still only giving up 2 runs and 2 hits because you get past that first inning.
Yeah, I mean, 2 bad pitches or 2 bad throws in the quarterback situation, and you don't want to be judged on that, but unfortunately, that's how sports work, right? You get judged on the pick, you get judged on the fastball middle, or the high fastball you left up, or what, you know, the slider that never dropped on you, you know what I mean? And that's what you get judged on, not the other 85 pitches that you made well, it's the 2 that you didn't. And with Sawyer Robertson, you're talking about somebody who was ranked one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12 last year, you said, across the country, and I agree. He's one of the best returning quarterbacks in the country, and with a new offensive coordinator there as well, they feel like a guy that threw for 28 touchdowns a year ago, best for 2nd in the Big 12. He has all the confidence in the world. And you go back and look at some of the throws that he was making and the plays that he was making. Christian, when he has time, he can make the throws with anybody in college football. He's got the arm strength. He's got the IQ. He can also take off and run a little bit too. I don't want people to get fooled by that. Robertson can run a hair, but he can make the throw if he has the time. It was an offensive line that was shaky last year, should be better this year, which puts a whole lot of pressure, no pun intended, on what the Auburn defensive front is going to have to do, which is put pressure on Sawyer Robertson. If you let him sit back there and pick this defense apart, we're confident in Auburn's secondary, but they can't hold for that long. Auburn's had good secondaries in the past, but they've had poor defensive lines to go with it periodically, and you see it across the sport of football. You just can't hang on that long.
Sawyer Robertson right now plus 6,500 for the Heisman odds. Good for the top 25 in players, and I think he was the 19th ranked quarterback. But again, a lot of those are the hype guys. I see guys like CJ Carr, Miller Moss. You see guys like Bryce Underwood, Dylan Raiola right in there as well. But you want to talk about a guy that's polished as a starter, it's Sawyer Robertson, and I would be willing to put him above a bunch of those names that I see right here on Sports Illustrated websites. But yeah, can make the throws with everybody on the field, has all the arm talent in the world, is not necessarily a willing runner from a scrambling perspective, but does enough on the quarterback reads, or could take off if there is that hole, just to keep the defense honest, right? Might be somebody that could give you 5 or 6 carries a game, but could break one for 30 and has the mobility to make a couple of guys miss. Had a couple rushing touchdowns in there last year as well, and it's an offense that I mentioned a little bit earlier, relied on the chunk plays, and it's because they found that balance. About halfway through the year, from running the football to throwing the football, Sawyer Robertson became that rocket, to where as soon as the defense started creeping in, trying to guard the run for a team that averaged over 150 rushing yards per game, bam, there was that pop, there was that 65-yard quick strike.
And so Auburn defensively, again, you have to get after the quarterback, man. And we have confidence in this Auburn defensive line to do that. You've just got to do it. And I think Baylor's run game is solid. I don't think it's anything crazy. They had some big runs in that game against LSU, but I think that speaks more about LSU's defense than it does Baylor's running attack.
Sure. I think they also put I do think they put more emphasis on it, though. They have two running backs that are both returning, Bryson Washington and Dawson Pendergrass. Washington had over 1,000 yards last year. Pendergrass had right around 700. Mm-hmm. So it is a really nice 1-2 combo. Both averaged right around 6 yards per carry. And again, team lived on those big plays. They almost relied on it a little bit more on the running game, so that way they could take that big strike and play action and try and keep the defense sleeping. They were 19th in the country, were the Baylor offense, in offensive scoring, but as you mentioned, 79th in defensive scoring. And I know we're talking about Baylor's offense right now, but you feel like that right there can be a big spot that Auburn can take advantage of. You feel like that's one of the big conversations that you're hearing about right now.
Yeah, we had somebody text us in the text box, 334-784-1067, asking the size comparison between between the Auburn linemen compared to Baylor's linemen on both sides of the football in terms of their size. So in comparison, Baylor's offensive line versus Auburn's defensive line, and then vice versa, Auburn's offensive line versus Baylor's defensive line. And just by looking at it earlier and getting these things pulled back up, here's what Baylor's offensive linemen look like, not in any particular order, just in terms of what we expect to be impactful players up front. I mean, you're talking 6'3", 310. You're looking at 6'5", 345. You're looking at 6'6", 312. I mean, you're talking some big boys up front for the Baylor offensive line in comparison to the Auburn defensive front, whether you're talking interior defensive linemen or the guys on the edge as well.
Yeah, I was looking at Auburn's offensive line size. Chaplin, 6'7", 320. Dylan Wade, 6'3", 300. Jeremiah Wright, 6'5", 338. Mason Murphy, 6'5", 315. And so comparable, at least from the standpoint of offensive lines, but you feel like the biggest conversation where you feel like Auburn has the biggest advantage is, yeah, what you're talking about, Auburn's defensive line going up against Baylor's offensive line.
And because look at, I mean, listen to some of these some of these sizes. You know the names, but just reminding you on the size of the guys we're going to see in rotation, by the way, just because, remember, we were talking about the depth chart yesterday, just because somebody gets the first snap of the game defensively on that interior line, for Auburn that is, doesn't mean that they're just leaps and bounds above the guy behind him. This will be a true rotation at the defensive line spot. 6'4", 320. 6'5", 330. 6'1", 256. 6'0", 340, basically. Looking at Dallas Walker, 6'3", 360. Zykevious Walker, 6'4", 300. I mean, James Ash, who we heard a ton about during fall camp, 6'3", 300. Auburn will have the size advantage in almost every spot in this game on the interior line both ways. You just got to be able to use your skill set, use your advantage, and get after the quarterback defensively and then give Jackson Arnold time offensively, because we're talking about the Baylor defense next.
Yeah, I mean, again, you feel like on paper Auburn has the talent. We've talked about the blue chip ratio with the 4- and 5-star products, even the transfer portal additions that we'll get to here in just a few minutes. You feel like Auburn has the advantage in just about every category. For those, if you're throwing up a paper-by-paper comparison, it simply comes down to execution, and well, that's why you play the game.
Auburn and Baylor on Friday. We continue a Baylor preview right after this. That's what Baylor's offense is going to do: throw the ball, move quickly, and score as many points as they can. What will they do defensively against the biggest question mark of the year, the Auburn offense? We talk about that coming up next, as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line with a Baylor preview, our Baylor breakdown, as we get closer and closer to Friday night in Waco, Texas. And just talked about the Baylor offense that Auburn is going to have to stop and make some plays and hopefully force a turnover or two to kind of stall them out a little bit. But the bigger question is the other sides of the football for these two respective teams. It's the Baylor defense versus the Auburn offense. And while Tiger fans may not have overly big concerns on what the Baylor defense is going to throw at them compared to what Auburn is going to do offensively, that's where everybody is right now, is Is Auburn going to play well? Can Jackson Arnold play well? Can the running game go well? Can the offensive line do what they're supposed to? Like, that's what all the Auburn fans are worried about. But they do need to have a little bit of respect for this Baylor defense, too.
Yeah, they do. Before we even dive into that, I totally forgot to mention it earlier in the show. But I know your favorite celebrity wanted to give a shout-out to Taylor Swift.
No, we don't have time for that. Or room or anything, because I genuinely don't care. I literally, good for them. Happiness in the air. Whoopty freaking do. The fact that the NHL posted about it, and it's like, what are we doing? Like, what?
It's okay. So
are we doing? Auburn posted about it?
Yeah.
Huh. Talk about.
Travis Kelce posted a tweet in like 2011 that says, like, I love college basketball. And so they retweeted it and said, we do too. Congrats on the engagement or something.
Nobody else, we're about to get to the phone lines, and nobody's going to understand this but you and me and one other person. This goes back to our social media conversation we were having last night, and why and how social media is so broken and manipulative. Yep. That is a perfect example of that right there. The fact that Auburn decided, you know what? Taylor Swift, there's a video of Taylor Swift playing in Auburn back in like 2008. Let's post congratulations to Travis and Taylor Swift.
I mean, there we go. I mean,
I hate it, man. Let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
This is Michael from Auburn.
What's up, Michael in Auburn? What's on your mind?
I guess just, you know, I'm in my early 40s, and so I'm just thinking, and maybe it's just a superstitious kind of thing, but, you know, I don't remember. I go back into the 90s. I don't remember, and I'm not talking about neutral site games, but a non-conference away game that Auburn has just come out dominating. In my time at Auburn, I mean, we lost to Syracuse, USC, Georgia Tech. You know, there were several, and here recently, you know, Penn State. There's just been several non-conference away games that we let slip by, and even, you know, even the home at home at home, you know, we squeaked by, but I can't think, and you may be able to look in a record book, I can't think of a time that we have just dominated a non-conference away game. And like the neutral sites, Oregon and Washington, we won, but it was a neutral site game. So just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that. And just I'm hopeful, but I don't think we're going to dominate. Even if we get a win, I don't see us blowing Baylor out. But I'll hang up and listen, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call and appreciate the insight, and I'll add on to it, Christian. When's the last time consistently that Auburn has gone on the road in general and dominated or came out and looked good? I'm talking even in conference games. Now, there's a couple where Auburn went to Fayetteville a couple of times and has played well, or even you could put Kentucky last year. I mean, Auburn played well in that game, Jarquez Hunter's historic night in Lexington, but when's the last time Auburn went to Athens and played well for four quarters? When's the last time Auburn went to Tuscaloosa and played well for four quarters? When's the last time that Auburn went to last time Auburn went to Nashville, they almost lost to Vanderbilt, right? A few years back in 22?
Yeah.
20, something like that. There's a couple of times Auburn has gone to A&M and looked pretty good, but there's also other times that Auburn has looked horrific in College Station. So to Michael's point, Auburn has not historically been a good road team, at least in recent memory. And to his specific point of non-conference road games, yeah, Auburn has been terrible.
It goes to show you even more and just another tally on the emphasis of how this is the most important game for Auburn that they have played because of so many different reasons since forever. Right? We've had the conversations of if it was Oregon in the neutral site game, or if it was Washington. We've had a couple people say Washington State in 2013, but again, that was a Power 5 opponent at the time, and it was at home. And so, yeah, it throws another tally into the reasons of, man, this is such an important game for so many different reasons.
Another road game that Auburn took, a true road game non-conference, was the Kansas State game in 2014. Auburn didn't play well in that game. They escaped it 20-14. And according to the game notes for this week, this is the first time that Auburn will take a true road game to begin the season since they took on USC in 2002. I mean, it hasn't happened very often, and Auburn doesn't take these non-conference road trips all that, whether it's to open the season, middle of the season, or whatever, but a lot of the Georgia Tech games, like he was saying back in the day, but he's right. I mean, Auburn just has not played well in true road games, whether it's in the conference or out of the conference, which is why I think just generally around the fan base, there's kind of a lot of stress on this because we've been here before and it hasn't really gone Auburn's way.
No, and there's so many people talking about it now, ranking all of the top games of this weekend. And man, I've seen so many people put Auburn and Baylor in that third or fourth spot just because of how much is riding on this game for both teams. Both teams have such similar expectations, both with their win-loss record, what they're hoping to be able to do, how both teams have been mutually discussed as, I wouldn't really be surprised if they do this. I really wouldn't be surprised if they do this, on two opposite ends of the spectrum when you're looking at it in November or December. And so, yeah, this win, getting things off on the right foot, is so important, and it's something that Auburn hasn't done in a long time.
And it's going to take a good offensive performance for Auburn against an improved Baylor defense, a restocked Baylor defense, and Auburn needs to take some notes from what LSU did in the bowl game last year, because the Tigers threw it all over the yard, and Jackson Arnold and this Auburn offense could do the exact same thing on Friday night in Waco, Texas. We talk more about that as we go, but we take our bottom of the hour break. Christian sits down with the defensive coordinator of the Lee Scott Warriors, Coach Jacob Osment, to talk about a week one victory and preview the Indians of Lochipoca. That's coming up next here on ESPN 106.7. Stick around.
Minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and we're continuing our high school coverage. And at 2:30, that means we get to talk some Lee Scott Academy football. And I bring in the man with the freshest kicks in all the game, Lee Scott Academy defensive coordinator Jacob Osment. Coach, hope you're doing well here on this Tuesday afternoon.
Man, I'm hanging in there. My head just got a little bit bigger, but I appreciate when Shoe Game recognizes Shoe Game.
Very fair. Very fair. Well, I've always recognized you and referred to you as the guy who brings the energy. You're that energy guy on the sideline for Lee Scott Academy. How does that come about? How did you take on that role, and how much pride do you have in being that energy guy for the guys on the team?
We found that, you know, sometimes there's a culture in just today's society of where, you know, guys may not feel comfortable celebrating other guys. It's a weird thing that we're beginning to notice. And I want our guys to know that they've got somebody in their corner the entire time. And truthfully, I wish I could say, you know, all of it's just manufactured for appearance, but Coach Daniel does have to rein me in every now and again to make sure that I get off that sideline. So I want to make sure these guys know that, you know, especially on our side of the ball, that we want to bring the energy every single play. And let them know that's what we're going to do every single day, and it's not just on a Friday night or this week a Thursday night.
Sure. Well, we've talked about that plenty of times on the Lee Scott Sports Network. You have that little belt loop, almost the dog collar. They got to pull you back, but you're the first guy out there after third down stops, the first guy out there after touchdowns. And so, I mean, again, that energy guy on the sideline. I wanted to take a step back into last year before we dive into the week one game against ACA with Lee Scott Academy, the first year in the AA. HSAA last year. What did you learn about the team last year and from coaching in general, whether that be from the win streaks to the losing streaks that helped you and your coaching on the field?
Well, being one of the younger guys, I do mean that respectfully and not as funny, but one of the guys that doesn't have the public coaching experience growing up at Schulzberg, I played in public athletics. So, you know, never going into it blind. You knew the athletes you were going to be going against week in and week out. So you never went into it blind. It helps having the wealth of knowledge with Coach Daniel and Coach Drakeford and sure. Coach Wade. Reminding us of, you know, all of the nuances that not only come with public ball, but also in that 3A and lower ball where not everybody's running the same offenses and defense, and a lot of it is guys going both ways. So some of the similarities that we saw with, you know, AISA of, you know, a lot of guys going both ways. But I think we saw really kind of what we expected. I don't think we got blindsided by the level of competition. I think Coach Daniel did a great job preparing us as coaches, preparing the guys as players on what to expect. Again, not just on a Friday, but instilling that the preparation has to begin with a good Monday practice and all the way down the line. And there really is no weeks off. I mean, other than your open week, and a lot of times you're spending a good majority of that time working on your next opponent anyway. Every week, especially those region weeks, you don't know what game is going to be the one that actually can make or break your season. And we ended up finding that out on the bad side last year, where that Dadeville game came back to haunt us.
Yeah.
And we just didn't take care of business in a region game right there. So, you know, that's one of those things that you want to always shore up your region as soon as possible, but you never know when that crucial loss or that crucial win really can define your season. And it can be as early as that fifth or sixth game.
I'm talking with Jacob Osmond, the defensive coordinator for Lee Scott Academy football. A 40-20 week one win over the ACA Eagles to kick off the 2025 season. What was the emphasis all fall camp on starting fast and getting off to that really nice start in 2025?
Yeah, the two biggest things for us has been we've all recognized, you know, how many guys have got to go both ways. But in also recognizing that, we've really stressed and emphasized to some of our younger guys how important their role is and knowing what to do either side of the ball, special teams, whatever it might be. You know, that's been our emphasis on mentally being prepared for the moment when your moment is called, whenever that might be, if it's play one or play 120. You know, that's been one of our big focuses. And then, you know, the biggest thing as well for Coach Daniel has been both ball security and tackling. On the offensive side, he has placed huge emphasis on us having great ball security. Coach Wade places great emphasis on that. And then he's really challenging us this year on defense to really emphasize tackling, finishing tackles. And then we're not calling them turnovers this year. We're calling them takeaways, really trying to manufacture takeaways.
Yeah.
Because turnover means the offense gave us something. We want to take the ball away when we get that opportunity.
Coach, I know you're a defensive guy at heart, but correct me if I'm wrong, the defensive coordinators love offense just as much because that makes your job that much easier. The offense had 7 plays of 20-plus yards, and many of those coming through the air against Alabama Christian Academy. How has your side of the ball helped with this new style of attack with Coach Wade's offense?
I'd be lying if I didn't say this. Right at halftime, he told me, right when we were leaving the locker room, he said, "Hey, y'all just keep holding on to him." I said, "I don't have to if you keep scoring." So we're loving every second of it. We're loving, I mean, how can you not recognize, you know, Brooks's effort this past
yeah.
week? But he doesn't get that done without those big five up front moving him and even pushing him along on some of those huge plays on down the field. But, man, it really does make your job a whole lot easier when we've got an offense that was clicking right along Friday night. It really helps you breathe just a little bit knowing that cushion's there.
You mentioned this Lee Scott defense isn't going to be the fastest or the strongest, but you mentioned a couple things to me throughout the offseason is that they're bought in and that they're very smart. How do you use that to your advantage, whether that's disguises or blitzes or anything like that, to try and get that one up and get those takeaways from the offensive side of the football?
It came with this summer, man. We've had a group of guys now, especially some of the younger ones. The leadership of our older guys this year, emphasizing the importance of knowing what to do. We haven't had, since I've been here, I don't think we've had a group of seniors that have led as well, not just vocally, but by example, as this group has this year. The other thing that we're starting to see is it's easy to run what you want to run when you've got a solidified baseline. And our younger guys, our guys we're having to count on that maybe not were the ones to be expected, like, you know, some of our ninth and 10th grade puppies, them having the confidence of knowing what to do allows us to have the ability to add some movements here and there, but at the same time, keep our defense simple enough that follows the same model that we always have, is We're going to keep it simple. We're going to be gap sound, and we're just going to gang tackle, and we're going to try to take you to the sideline. I mean, that's got to be our point of emphasis, and we got to eliminate cutback and finishing our tackles. Just the simplest things, maximizing on those, it doesn't have to get incredibly fancy or complex. And we've still got a long way to go to just polish up just the simple basics and to avoid the coach speak, but to hit it, just doing our job, our 1/11th on every single play, and nothing more allows us to have a successful play.
Here on ESPN 106.7, Coach Jacob Osmond, the defensive coordinator for Lee Scott Academy, joining us here on the phone lines. You now look ahead to a very short week with this week now, or this game rather, now on a Thursday night, getting moved up from a Friday night. How has and how will your team go about the preparation on this short week?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing for us as a staff is we got together pretty quick on Saturday like we always do. And really spent this weekend really preparing so that when we got to our guys on Monday, we knew exactly what we wanted to do with our game plan. We met Monday morning. We're starting to utilize a lot of meeting time, trying just to utilize a little bit of the downtime that we've maybe had in the past, where we're not, you know, just getting on their bodies as much, but really trying to get them mentally to envision the plays that we're working on. We're trying to make sure that you know, we're not just telling our guys to watch film, but actually sitting with them and walking them through alignments and formations and assignments and, you know, the varying nuances that change week to week with, you know, different styles of offenses. So, you know, just really placing a lot of emphasis on the front end of a Monday. And then really, we're basically keeping our same practice schedule this week. Nothing, you know, crazy other than where we normally do a 5 a.m. Thursday, you know, run through practice. We'll just come to school Thursday like normal and have a normal Thursday.
A battle of 1-0 and 1-0 over at Judd Scott Field here in just a couple of days. Last year, it was a 21-12 victory for Lee Scott Academy at Lochapoca. That was Lee Scott's first ever road win on the football field in the AHSAA. What can you tell us about the Indians team this year that we're going to see take the field at Judd Scott Field?
Hey, ton of respect for Coach Hall, what he's building over there, and then offense coordinator Daniel Bird is one of my best friends. So he and I have been going back and forth all week, just messing with each other. We've been sending videos back and forth to each other of who's giving the bigger boom whack on a on a touchdown play or a big open field tackle. But, you know, listen, Lochapoca is incredibly athletic. You know, we saw last season this is a team that just like this season, that cutback gets very dangerous. So maintaining our leverage is going to be important. Making sure, you know, Coach Wade and Coach Daniel on the offensive side have really emphasized making sure ball security is there, making sure that we're sound on all of our blocking techniques. They've got a pretty good size front on both sides of the ball. And man, they can fly around. Their quarterback number three, he is quick as a hiccup, man. And we saw that a lot on film against Prattville Christian. And we saw that, you know, they're aggressive to come stop the run, man. And you can't help but think, you know, with the game that our running game had, that they're going to try to probably, our expectation is they're going to want to come stop the run. And who wouldn't? But very athletic team, just continuing to see a ton of growth. And like I said, knowing Coach Bird over there, just hearing what all they're continuing to build over there as a program's been really good. Really excited to have them here. And then he and I and our families are actually going to get together Saturday to watch the Bama-Florida State game. So hopefully it won't be too awkward.
Bama-Florida State, man. I thought there was a game on Friday that was more important than that.
Well, you know, Friday, we like the 24-hour rule. So just in case, you know, things go sideways on Thursday night, we want to make sure Friday's not too awkward.
Very, very fair. Very fair. Well, Coach, it's the best time of the year. It's high school football season. It's college football season. Do we have an official prediction for Friday or for that Florida State-Alabama game?
Florida State 1 million, Alabama 0.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of questions going into the Auburn-Baylor game, and I'm going to be honest with you, and not being the homer, the Auburn guy, or anything like that, I'm not going to be shocked to see a 20-point differential in that game. there's a lot of hesitation with this Auburn team. I've got no reservations with the best receiving room in the country, a quarterback who's proved himself, regardless of what the talking heads want to say. You know, who cares if he didn't play great? He took a team into Alabama and gave them all they wanted last year. The moment's not going to be too big for this team. I think what Coach Durkin's doing over there is awesome, and Keldrick's going to have one of the greatest, you know, defensive seasons we've seen lately. So I'm going to go 42-20 Auburn.
Wow.
And that's probably one of the – that's going to be a massive hot take, and I might get clipped for it, but we'll see.
Hey, well, you've gained a plenty of fans here that are listening on ESPN 106.7. They'll have to come see the defensive scheme on Thursday night against Lochapuca. Coach, thanks so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing you again on Thursday and seeing what kicks you bring out this week.
We'll see what we've got. Nothing to keep up with you, though, man.
When we come back, we'll give you some Auburn football updates as there are some more questions arising in the special teams unit. We'll talk about that when we come back and finish up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate the Lee Scott defensive coordinator, Jacob Osmond. Good dude. Always enjoy hearing from him, and glad he was able to hop on with us. And we'll see if you can get head coach Buster Daniel on next week. Understand he went through a minor surgery this morning, and so we wish him the best of luck and a speedy recovery for head coach Buster Daniel there for the Lee Scott Warriors. But got a couple of minutes here left in hour number one, and Hugh Freeze was on Tiger Talk last night with Andy and Brad over on Wings 94.3 and said something that we thought was getting better, but turns out it has unfortunately gotten worse for Alex McPherson, Auburn's projected starting kicker, who, when he was healthy, was one of the best in the country, but over the last year, year and a half, has been dealing with some major internal stomach intestinal issues, basically. I mean, has been dealing with this severe illness for quite some time. They were talking way back when that, I mean, his life was at risk at one point, and we thought it was getting better. And then Hugh Freeze said last night that it's actually gotten worse over the past couple of weeks, where he can't keep food down, he's losing weight and things like that. And so, man, I don't know what's going on, and by no means am I going to try and sit here and claim that I do, claim that I know any sort of medical terminology or anything, or know what's happening within the McPherson family and camp and things, but it just seems to be more serious than what maybe they thought, or maybe it's another flare-up. I don't know, but at some point, I feel like if you are Alex and you are the McPherson family, like, you've got to kind of look at this at a bigger lens, right? And kind of just do what's best for you, for your health, for your life. I mean, literally, I hate it for him. I absolutely hate it for him, because McPherson is one of the best kickers in America. Him and his brother, of course, kicking for the Bengals. And you just hate the idea that he can't get back to where he wants to be. And Freeze said on Monday in his presser that it was literally going to be a game-time decision on who was going to be kicking and doing what kicking duties. And so we'll have to see how all that goes. But I know that was disappointing to hear last night.
Yeah, it's got to be infuriating for him, just because you feel like you're at a loss, because there's nothing that he can do to prevent it. Or, again, when you thought it was getting better, you hope, and by no means is this the speculation, but maybe you hope that it's just anxiety or something with the football season kicking up. I know that can flare up a lot of things, and again, not saying that's what it is, but yeah, when you get to the point of you feel like things are getting better, then all of a sudden it gets worse, and you know that the Auburn doctors and everybody that's on the medical staff there knows what's best, and his family knows what's best for him. But yeah, right now you're not at the point of trying to focus on kicking footballs. You're trying to make sure that you're doing everything that you can just for the betterment of your everyday life. And that's kind of where the focus is, and I know that that's where it is right now, and obviously you're still wanting to do so much on the field, and that's what you feel like is so frustrating for him, because we all know he wants nothing more than to go out and kick on Saturdays.
Yeah, and so for now, you have to figure out what is going to happen with Auburn special teams, and to go about this in the football-only mindset here, keeping that in mind, Auburn's got to figure this thing out. Auburn has to figure out, okay, if McPherson can't go or can't go to his full range or extent or what have you, is Towns Magoo ready? Is Magoo ready to go? And Freese said that Towns would be the number two guy. He said that yesterday afternoon. He said if that's the situation, Towns is the number two. He says he feels like he's made progressions, has gotten better, and hopefully has shaken off the mistakes from a year ago. And if that's the case, he better be ready. And look, he was one of the best kickers in high school football when he was kicking here in Auburn, at Auburn High School, but it wasn't his best year last year. He got put in tough spots, yeah, but Auburn's going to need him. If it's Alex, if it's Towns or whoever, you can't have a questionable kicking game in college football, especially on the road in a season opener.
Yeah, week one and on the road. Those are two things that you can't have question marks when it comes to your kicking unit. We did see that on the starting lineups or on the depth chart, it was going to be Towns that was handling the kickoffs, just because of the power that's in the right leg. But yeah, you hope that the accuracy can show up if he's needed to kick some field goals and get 3 points on the board.
Yeah, hoping that all gets worked out and wishing the best for McPherson health-wise. And we'll see what Auburn's game plan is on special teams come Friday night in Waco, Texas. That's it for hour number one. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two. A great interview with now a national championship-winning coach. Plus, we get some insight from across the state as well. That's all coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And if you missed any of our number one, you missed some good stuff. We did a deep dive into Baylor. We talked about the Bears, what they did a year ago, how they ended last season, and what they could look like this season, including on Friday night against your Auburn Tigers in Waco, Texas. We talked a lot about the Bears. We'll continue to do that as the week goes on. So be sure if you missed that to check it out. Also, Christian sat down with the defensive coordinator of the Lee Scott Warriors for the football team, head coach or coach Jacob Osmond, that is. Got to talk to him about the 1-0 start for the Warriors, how they are going to be hosting Lochapoca this Thursday over at Judd Scott Field. So we had that interview, and also talked a little bit of Auburn special teams as they are trying to figure out who is going to be kicking the football for them against Baylor on Friday. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you can always go back and check it out on the podcast version of the show each and every day on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
here in hour number two. Going to talk a little bit of Auburn basketball as Auburn has an exhibition upcoming. Also some news in Atlanta. Not quite the opponent that you were thinking Auburn was going to get, but they do have an opponent in Atlanta for Holiday Hoopsgiving. Also going to talk with Mike Rodak from Bama 24/7. We got him on a couple of weeks ago and figured this was the perfect time to get him back on the phone line once again, recapping everything in fall camp for Alabama, some position battles, some injuries, possible expectations for Coach DeBoer in year two. Also a little bit of a Florida State preview. Are people overlooking the Noles? Are people in Tuscaloosa nervous about Gus Malzahn and Tommy Castellanos and all the words that have been shared as you make your way over to Tallahassee? But Jacob, you teased it on the way out, and we have a really, really special interview coming up here to start hour number two.
Yeah, our man Ben Taylor over on News Talk WANI, who makes appearances around, and we always enjoy talking with him, and does a great job as the host of Auburn Opelika this morning. He was able to sit down with head coach Tommy Tuberville late last week and talk about how Tubbs is now a national champion winning coach. On that 2004 team, I had a chance to sit down and talk with Coach Tuberville. You can also hear Ben Taylor tonight over on News Talk WANI 98.7 for all of our Opelikians who are listening, since today is election day in the city of Opelika. If you're looking for the results and want to hear some conversation about that, we're having special election night coverage on 98.7 News Talk WANI. That's 98.7 FM, 1400 AM. Ben Taylor, Riley Hubbard are going to be on the air from 7 to 9 discussing the different ward races, the mayoral race, talking results and things like that, having some special guests there as well. So, again, if you're in Opelika or just want to hear what's going on about the Opelika elections, that's from 7 to 9 over on News Talk WANI, 98.7 FM and 1400 AM. But our man Ben Taylor sat down with Tommy Tuberville, the national championship winning coach, and we have that for you right now.
Visiting with head coach Tommy Tuberville from the 2004 Auburn Tigers, now national champions officially, as news coming out of Auburn University. And coach, congratulations, man. I know that that's a big thing. You've said numerous times that's one of the best teams and best programs you've ever been around.
Oh, no doubt, Ben. It's just unfortunate it took 21 years. But, you know, I won four national championships at Miami and some other schools and as an assistant coach. And now I can put this on my resume as being a head coach of a national championship team. And, you know, what a great team, as you said. Not just a team, but great young men. And they've grown up to be great young men. And proud of them, proud for what they did. We had a great coaching staff. But you know what really helped us that year was our fans. My God, our fans traveled with us. It was the scene at Tennessee when we played them in the middle of the year up at Neyland Stadium, and we were ahead like 28 points at halftime, and they were a top 10 team. Mm. It was phenomenal.
I will say this. That is probably, in my opinion, one of the best running back rooms I've ever seen in my lifetime. Now, I'm sure that, you know, yeah, some people would argue at Auburn that it wasn't too bad when it was Lionel Little Train James as well as Bo and Tommy Agee when they were back there. But, I mean, you had guys in the fourth spot that weren't even seeing the field. And when they did, you know, they were turning it on and looked like starters out there.
Yeah, and you remember Brandon Johnson. I had to get him to transfer the year before, who played 10 years in the NFL at 6'5", 275 pounds, and running 4.5 40. Then we had Trey Smith. Hey, we were unbelievable. And, of course, we had an offensive line to go with it, tight ends. And it was just fun to watch. If somebody couldn't stop the run, they were in for a long day against that 2004 offense.
Jason Campbell now a part of the broadcast with Andy and the guys and does a lot of pregame stuff on the air and does some stuff with NIL at the university. And, you know, he's one of my favorite Auburn players that have ever come through. And you got to see it, coaches. Jason went through quite a few offensive coordinators. And even last year, Al Borges talked about how when he came to Auburn, his eyes just lit up. He just didn't realize what he had in store for himself with somebody like Jason at the helm.
Yeah, you know, the key was, and I think one of the best coaches that I ever coached with that was a technique guy and really understood offense and how to coach a quarterback. It's hard to find. You find all these guys that come in and think they can coach a quarterback, but they don't really coach fundamentals. Bobby Petrino, who now is at Arkansas, was the best I've ever seen. And, of course, Bobby had a good career at Louisville and Arkansas, and
unfortunately left in Atlanta, but Texas A&M. But I tell you what, Jason was a guy that needed that. He needed somebody to just put the fundamentals. Then Al came in and did the same thing. It's just a fun time. He got offensive line. We had receivers, Courtney Taylor, Ben Evan Aruma should do, and Ben Obamanu. And so we just had a lot of good players.
You know, you hear different stories. They brought him up last year from that team to talk. Andy did at one of the lunches that they had, and that was one of the greatest lunches I've been to because it had that team, number one, and then also Bruce Pearl spoke that day. That was a star-studded Auburn luncheon to go to. But even Eden's talking about how when he made that famous sack against LSU that just rocked the stadium, and he didn't even realize what he'd done until he got to the sideline. And that team just seemed like it was almost like all business, like their expectations were to be successful and to persevere regardless if they were down, whether they were up. It almost was a semi-pro team, it looked like you had on your hands.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those kids played in NFL, and, of course, they're a lot of friends. We've had the 10- to 20-year reunion. It's good to see all those guys. I tell Brett Edens every time I see him, I said, I had a great look at you when you had come off the corner and sacked the quarterback, LSU quarterback, and I swear you had your eyes closed, you know. I tell you what, the defense was—I mean, it was just an all-around rounded team with good, excellent kicking game. But the coaches, if you remember, we didn't go through a lot of coaches while I was at Auburn. The whole key is keeping the same coaches there to continue to teach the same things. Recruiting was great, and a lot of those guys that played on that team were 2 and 3 stars. They weren't 4 and 5 stars. They made themselves into players, and again, it'd be hard to have a team like that again simply for the fact of the NIL.
Again, while he's out and about and traveling, as well as politicking and taking care of things in Washington, Tommy Tuberville joins us on our hotline as we talk about the 04 team as well as college football in general. Not to take anything away from the 04, but NIL, some things have changed, some things haven't. Do we still have a grasp on the how that's going to be handled moving forward, or are we still going to have to keep people involved and slap hands? And, I mean, you kept hearing, even out of Auburn's side, come August 1, trust me, you know, you'll see that, you know, everything will change. And nothing, it doesn't seem like, because of rulings that have taken place and that kind of thing. So where do you stand on that to this day, Coach, as far as NIL is concerned?
Well, Joe Manchin and I for 3 years tried to help with the bill and get it on the floor. It's almost impossible to do that. We're going to have to get involved federally. President Trump knows that. I visit with him quite often. He did a few things to try to save women's sports, the NIL, and Olympic sports, with an executive order. The NIL is out of the cat's out of the bag. Okay, and I'm for kids making money. But the judge, the ruling was that it was when you got there, you make money off your name, image, and likeness, not being recruited. So it's turned into pay for play. I think that's one thing we got to get out of is recruiting with money to get to attract players. Now, once they get there, they get paid whatever they earn or whatever you want to give them. But I think at the end of the day, that's got to be addressed. But the one thing that I've talked to President Trump, I'll talk to him again next week, and it's going to be about the transfer portal. We have to do something about that. We can't let kids transfer every year. Again, everybody's got their opinion on it. My opinion is what worked for us for 50 years was, hey, you're allowed to transfer, but you only transfer and you lose that year. You have to sit out here. You can't play immediately. I think that's one thing that would really slow down, the NIL. It would also help on graduation. You hear nothing about education anymore in college sports. It's got to go back to being education-minded. And I think the transfer portal would be one of the things that we could rectify to make this thing work again.
Senator Tommy Tuberville, also gubernatorial candidate Tommy Tuberville, as we talk to him as he is out and about traveling today, lucky enough to get some time with him as he's in the car on the roadway and talking a little bit about football, both at Auburn, also reminiscing about the 04 National Championship team now, as well as where we are headed NIL-wise. Again, Tommy Tuberville on our hotline. Yeah, they showed graphics on a player, and I'm not going to call any names out, but basically five schools in 5 years and still didn't have a degree. Yeah. And that there's an issue. Oh. There's a problem with that when that's the case.
Yeah, big problem. And again, if we're going to have minor league sports, let's don't even make them go to school. Just sign them and put them, you know, have a salary cap like the NFL. You know, bring kids in, train them. Don't worry about going to class. It's becoming a joke. What it's becoming, and a lot of our education system's a joke anyway. Of a lot of half our kids in this country can't read and write past sixth grade reading level. But we have got to start not just talking about education in this country. We've got to educate, and a lot of it is looked at through the eyes of these young kids, so these players in college sports. And so we've got to make good examples, but we also got to educate these kids that come to these universities. And that's going to be on my agenda for, you know, the year and a half in the Senate. And heaven help if I can become governor, it's going to be the same thing when I get to Alabama running the state.
Before I let you go, Coach, are you planning on, as the university contact you, they're going to bring you guys back? You know, there's not a lot of guys from the 1910 and 1914 teams that can come back and celebrate. But now that those banners are going to be hung up in the stadium, have they got any plans to bring you guys back this year at all to help celebrate the awarding of the national championship?
Well, I haven't heard of anybody, but of course everybody's busy right now going to school and getting ready to start the season. I'll be there at almost every game, but I know it'll bring tears to the eyes of all these kids and I've seen them painting the 2004 on the stadium of being one of the national championship teams. There's not a more deserving team. Now, I know everybody deserves to go to a national championship. It's almost impossible. But these kids have had to wait 21 years. Some have even passed away that played on that team. You know, we talk about those guys that were in the trenches with all of us. But again, there's not a closer football team that's ever played at Auburn, and I will say that with all my heart, or anywhere than that 2004 team. They loved each other. They played hard. We've lost Brother Chet here in the last 4 months, who was a big part of that. But again, that'll be a good day when they pull down the curtain on the 2004 sign that says 2004 national champion Auburn Tigers.
Any prediction on the Auburn Baylor game out in Waco to kick off the season on Friday?
You know, I used to could tell you a little bit about opening season before NIL because you knew who were playing. You don't know who Baylor's got or who they bought. Who Auburn is really? You know, I've heard some good things at Auburn practice, but your practice is one thing, game's another, and you got to go on the road. And don't think Baylor's not going to be high sky high. And I think my understanding is they got a good quarterback. And Auburn's got to get off to a good start. You know, I won't go to that game. I'll be at the Ball State game the next week. But, you know, I'm pulling for them and hope they get off to a good start. But I tell you, it's like betting on a horse race. And all horses are the first time to run it. How the heck do you pick that? You know, you don't know who's who. So, same thing in the NIL. You know, we just have to grab a hold on and see what happens.
Coach, safe travels. I appreciate your time. Tell Camille I appreciate her putting all this together. And War Eagle, again, congratulations on the notoriety. We're going to have a number and a name hanging up there in the top of the stadium at Jordan-Hare.
And it'll be there forever, Ben. That's what's important. It'll be there forever for long after all of us are gone. People will look at that going, you know, wonder what kind of team that was. Well, you know, I think deep down, hopefully there'll be a little history written about that team. But looking forward to see everybody there. And thank God it's football season. Politics are just about wearing me out.
I love it. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, Coach. Safe travels. Thank you for your time today, sir.
All right. God bless.
Tommy Tuberville, national championship coach Tommy Tuberville from the 2004 season that will be honored a little bit later on in the year. Also, you will see signage around the stadium that says so as well. And Senator Tommy Tuberville, as well as gubernatorial candidate Tommy Tuberville, gracious enough to share his time with our Auburn Network family of stations.
So that was our buddy Ben Taylor from News Talk WANI. Had a chance again to sit down with Senator Tommy Tuberville, the governor running Tommy Tuberville. I don't want to say favored just yet, but a guy that is running for governor of state of Alabama. And of course, a national championship winning coach. Very cool to hear him talk about that, Christian. And for a team that absolutely deserved to be deemed national champions, you heard Tubbs at the beginning. He said, yeah, it took about 21 years too long, but either way, Auburn is national champions in 2004. The banner's already up. The number's already up. And as Tuberville said there at the end, it'll be there forever.
Yeah, that's the coolest thing. It'll be there forever. That's something that we've had so many people talk about of, man, you can look at the outside criticism, but Auburn didn't do it for social media or didn't do it for a national perspective. They did it for the Auburn family, for the Auburn people, the Auburn players that took place during those games. And now when you walk into Jordan-Hare Stadium, you're going to see that forever.
Yep, so really cool there. And again, we appreciate Ben sharing that with us. His visit with head coach Tommy Tuberville, who was with the Tigers for a long, long time, national champion, beat Alabama a bunch of times, and you heard him. He's going to be in town quite a bit for some football games this fall. I had the chance to meet him for the first time this past weekend. It was really, really neat. I got to talk to him about just a bunch of cool stories and things that he had to say. And so, again, we appreciate him spending the time with Ben Taylor over on News Talk WANI. We'll take our first break here at hour number two, come back, and we'll flip to the hardwood for a moment because a couple of the more games announced for Auburn basketball, an exhibition, and Auburn is once again playing in their favorite building, not named Neville Arena. It's State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta. We talk about that coming up next in hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break and we get an update from the other side of the state. Our man Mike Rodak from Bama 24/7 is going to be joining us, as he has once before. We'll get him on again as it's game week for the Crimson Tide as well. In a game that most people seem to be overlooking, Alabama and Florida State in Tallahassee. 5 years ago, this would have fed families. Now it's just like, Alabama's 2 touchdown favorites, Tallahassee. Florida State sucks. They were the laughingstock of college football. Ain't no way Alabama loses to Florida State. So we'll talk to him about that. Plus some of the position battles, just kind of putting a bow on fall camp, and what year two realistic expectations are for Kalen DeBoer in Tuscaloosa. But that's coming up at 3:30. And we got some news from Auburn basketball, Christian. An exhibition is on the calendar now, and Auburn also playing in Atlanta once again. This is the 6th year in a row they will be competing in the Holiday Hoops Giving event at State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta. And in years past, they've played some high-profile, big-name, big-logo teams take a little bit of a step back this year.
They did, yeah. We've talked about it. They played Memphis twice. They played USC. They played Ohio State last year, which we were sitting there going over this game, 91-53.
Oh, I mean, just embarrassed them. Played Indiana a couple years ago, did the exact same thing.
That was right after the Indiana or the Purdue win in Birmingham. And I remember sitting there talking about it, if we could go 1-1 in those two, regardless of the win, regardless of the loss, because we talked about it, Ohio State was a better team than what they showed in this game, but than what people were giving them credit for. And so walking into that week, it was, okay, you can go 1-1 and you feel like you're in a good spot. Well, instead, your combined margin of victory was like 800 points in that game. But yeah, they make their way to Atlanta once again on Saturday, December 13th, where they will take on Chattanooga, which isn't necessarily something that you're overly excited to hear a lot about. That being said, I feel like a game like this just goes to show you what Auburn's non-conference schedule has been over the past couple of years and into this year, where you're going and playing Chattanooga in a neutral site game in a really cool event, and you feel like you're upset that you're not playing a top 10 team in college basketball. I think this is a really, really good spot. Again, December 13th, their annual Holiday Hoopsgiving in State Farm Arena. I think it's a fantastic event, and I think it's a really good spot for Auburn to continue to do what they've done in the state of Georgia, in recruiting, in Atlanta, being able to get the Atlanta fan base of the Auburn fans that are in Atlanta to be able to go and see them for tickets that aren't necessarily outrageous, or even those that live in Auburn that can't make their way to Neville Arena. They can travel 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and go spend the day or spend the weekend in Atlanta and go watch this team play in a really cool site. And it's a team that you've talked about, or a location rather, that you've talked about, that Auburn, man, it might be their favorite place to play other than Neville Arena. If you could take the rims and the nets from State Farm Arena and put them inside Neville Arena, or put them from State Farm inside Neville Arena, you feel like this team would be unstoppable.
Yeah, so I think this matchup for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers, while again, it's not Indiana or Ohio State or Memphis or USC, it's not a P5 team in college basketball playing Chattanooga. It's a game that Auburn should run away with and have their way. It's just one of those games where you enjoy playing it. It's a nice opportunity, like you were talking about, and hopefully it's a nice break. You don't want the players to think this way, but it should be a nice break in the schedule for one that Auburn is going to be playing some seriously good teams with the non-conference schedule, the tournament in Vegas, and things like that. And so Auburn will play Chattanooga on that day. The other matchup is really intriguing to me. Georgia and Mike White are back for another season, taking on the Bearcats of Cincinnati, which could be a lot of fun. So you are looking at a P5 matchup there, Cincinnati from the Big 12, and, of course, Georgia from the SEC.
Yeah, again, you could turn it into a full event, right? Like a full,
day, a full day
where you go
yeah.
buy your event ticket. You get to watch 80 minutes of basketball, two SEC teams you're going to learn a lot about, because those two teams play each other to start the SEC season.
And that's a good Georgia team, too,
in Stegman Coliseum. And we've talked about Georgia and the trajectory that Mike White has that program. Just that name in itself makes me worry to play him when he was at Florida. You feel like Auburn could never beat him. Now that he's at Georgia, it hasn't been too much fun, to be completely honest with you. And so you wouldn't expect it to be any other way to kick off the SEC slate. But yeah, Auburn 4-1 all time in Holiday Hoopsgiving games, again defeating Ohio State 91-53 last year. Hopefully you can get a repeat this year.
You should be able to. December 13th, you can go and check it out there at State Farm Arena, as Auburn, it will be in the Holiday Hoopsgiving for basketball once again in 2025. We take a break here at the bottom of hour number two, and when we come back, our man Mike Rodak from Bama247 joins us as we preview the Crimson Tide and the Seminoles, Alabama and Florida State in week one on Saturday afternoon. We talk about that with our man Mike Rodak after this.
Halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being along with us. And we continue talking just college football and really week one matchups, especially in the SEC. And while we work to get our man Mike Rodak from Bama247 on the phone lines, I mean, there are some games where, yeah, there's not a whole lot of excitement as Georgia hosts Marshall as a 40-point favorite, or Arkansas with literally no spread over Alabama A&M or Oklahoma starting with Illinois State. But some of these matchups, Christian, are really, really good, including what we're going to talk about with him, is Alabama and Florida State. And a matchup that I feel like nobody is talking about it. Nobody is concerned. Nobody's worried, especially from the Alabama side, from what I can at least see and hear and have been told. I've yet to hear an Alabama fan that says, I'm worried about this game.
Yeah, you feel like everything, especially on the social media side of things, has turned everything that Tommy Castellanos, the new Florida State quarterback, everything that he's said, and he's been quite vocal and continues to be quite vocal about it, Alabama has turned that into comedic purposes, right? There hasn't been the, okay, what if he's being pretty confident for a reason? Should we be a little bit worried? You haven't really heard that on the side of those that wear crimson and white. But we talked about the college football marathon that's going on Thursday through Monday. You have SEC marathon Thursday through Sunday. That starts with Missouri and Central Arkansas on Thursday night at 6:30. There is no spread or anything for that game. You obviously have Auburn and Baylor on Friday night at 7 p.m.
Go ahead, get it out, get it over with, get it out of the way. Early kickoff times benefit the road team.
It does. It benefits the road team, and it would benefit us because you could come on here and either we'd have a great show or would not have to say a single word.
I just don't think I'd want to do a call a Friday or a call a high school game Thursday night and then have to wake up at 7 a.m. the next day to watch Auburn football.
That would be,
that's too much stress for that.
That would be pretty
morning.
Brutal. But no, 7 p.m. On Fox, and we're going to continue to dive into that throughout the week. But then Saturday morning, you get started with it right away. Number one versus number three, Texas and Ohio State, probably the biggest matchup of week one. You then have Tennessee and Syracuse, also that 11 a.m. game over in Atlanta. We've talked a lot about that game with both of these quarterbacks trying to figure, or both of these teams trying to figure out the confidence with their quarterbacks. Tennessee currently a 13.5 point favorite. You're shaking your head. Are you not buying it?
I can't get a feel for it. You think on paper, it's like, yeah, right? Tennessee, like Syracuse is terrible, right? They're horrible, but people seem to be buying into Fran Brown up there in Syracuse and upstate New York.
How long will he be there?
I don't know. I mean, another good season, and it's you have to believe he gets taken, right?
You hate to have that conversation already, and we're not talking about how long is he going to be there until he gets fired. It'll be how long until some other big program comes in and says, yeah, we'll pay whatever the buyout is, but we want you to come coach for our program, because he's absolutely incredible. He had some quotes either this morning or yesterday about his son and the scholarship, and says, like, I can pay that tuition, but I need to give my scholarships out to some other players and other kids that can't afford that tuition side of things. And so continues to go about things the right way. We were talking with Brody, though, at Winter Timber, and he was talking about how again, he's a big Tennessee fan, and said that the way that Heupel's offense works, you don't need that star quarterback. And if Joey Aguilar can just simply do what he needs to do, then Heupel will put him in the right positions, and that offensive game plan will give him enough success.
Says somebody that lost a star quarterback. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, Brody.
Yeah, did you hear that, Brody? Look, I don't know about Fran Brown. 1 year, 10-3 at Syracuse last year. How many college football fans could tell you that Syracuse was a 10-win team last year?
Or tell you that Kyle McCord was the quarterback that threw the ball 80 times a game.
And was the nation's leading passer last year.
Yeah.
He ain't there anymore. That was the Ohio State reject that went to Syracuse and was the nation's leading passer last year. So I don't know. If Syracuse can have another 9 or 10 win season, they're knocking on the door of an ACC championship game appearance. They're also knocking on the door of a college football playoff appearance, and somebody may come after him, because if you're winning games consistently at Syracuse, you can win games consistently anywhere, in my opinion. But if they come out and beat Tennessee, that's a really big win to start their season. Now, that could say more about Tennessee at the end of the season. Maybe that wouldn't look like a top 25 win at the end, but it would be to start the year for Syracuse. From an entertainment standpoint, I would flirt with the idea of Syracuse keeping this game closer than 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Tennessee should be the better team.
Syracuse right now, their win total projection is only 5.5. And so that's a big drop-off from that inevitable step back of 10-3 in year one. 5.5 wins.
That's their win total?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bottom of the ACC, tied with Cal. There's plenty of 6.5 win teams and 7.5 win teams. But, yeah, Clemson, Miami, Louisville, SMU kind of lead the ACC.
I will say their road schedule may be the toughest in the country. They go to Clemson, 2 SMU, 2 Georgia Tech, 2 Miami, 2 Notre Dame. That's brutal.
Yeah, that's not very
fun. That's brutal for Syracuse. And then the neutral side game against Tennessee. They have to host Duke, who I think is really good. You got to host North Carolina, who could end up being good. I mean, there's not a whole lot of gimme wins on that schedule for Syracuse. So that's a little bit more understandable. But I think Tennessee, not to give too many predictions, but I think Tennessee will win, but I do like Syracuse to keep it close.
Yeah, well, on Friday we'll give all of our official predictions for all of these games. Mississippi State and Southern Miss, a really weird game in Hattiesburg that Mississippi State agreed to go to. Mississippi State a 12.5 point favorite, but just a really weird game. Could be an interesting one on ESPN right at 11 a.m. One game that's not too many people talked about until the past couple of days, and it was more comedically, maybe it was because I brought it up yesterday and everybody said, okay, cool, yeah, I actually see that. But over at Kroger Field in Lexington, Kentucky, 11:45 kick, Toledo comes to town. Kentucky was a 6.5 point favorite, now a 9.5 point favorite. So a bunch of people have jumped on the Cats. You might have to wait to see if I have some big time prediction for the Rockets. You mentioned Marshall and Georgia. Will go over the Alabama-Florida State game. Come back to it here in just a moment. You mentioned Arkansas and Alabama A&M, Oklahoma-Illinois State, Florida-Long Island, Texas A&M, and UTSA, where the Aggies are a 24.5-point favorite at home for the 6 p.m. kick. Vanderbilt's going to blow out Charleston Southern. Clemson and LSU, I know that's a game we'll dive into a lot here later on in the week as well. And what could be a fun game just because of the way that these two offenses work? Ole Miss and Georgia State. Ole Miss is a 35.5 point favorite, but I think Georgia State could give the Rebels and Lane Kiffin a little bit of a run for their money, at least early on. I think Ole Miss is going to blow out the Panthers, but the style of play could be a fun one to watch in this one. But going back to it, yeah, Alabama, Florida State. Right now, Alabama, a 2-touchdown favorite, just about 13.5. The over-under is 50.5 points, so they're not expecting too many points in this game. Tickets you can get for $205.
Because Alabama fans are going to this game. I mean, that's just, you would think, and again, I said this earlier in the show, if this game was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the hype for this game would be up there with Ohio State, Texas, and Clemson, LSU. This would be another top 10 matchup.
Correct.
On the road in Tallahassee, I haven't looked at Alabama's history. If there's some historians, or maybe you could help me out here, when's the last time Alabama opened up the season in a true road game like this? Same thing that we're talking about with Auburn. It's been since 2002 since Auburn's done it.
Not even opened up, but just went to.
Well, I mean, they went to South Florida a couple years ago. I don't really count. It's technically a true road game. And remember, that was a nasty game in the rain where they played all three quarterbacks, and turned out Nick Saban was the genius that we knew him to be, and it all worked out and whatever. But when's the last time that Alabama went on the road to open up the season in a true P4, or back then P5, road game? Not neutral site, true road game. And it's so fascinating that Auburn and Alabama are doing it in the same year. I think Doug and I talked about this a while back, but really interesting that both the schools in the state decided, yeah, let's go on the road and open up with a P4 team in week one.
This could not be completely accurate, but with a quick search and a quick use of artificial intelligence, it says that the last time Alabama played a football road opener was in 2000, when they lost to UCLA at the Rose Bowl.
Wow. Okay, so Auburn and Alabama are on the same path then, where it's been 20 to 25 years since they've done something like this.
Yeah, it says that this is Alabama's first true road opener in a non-conference game since 2000.
Wow. That's wild. That's crazy. But, again, you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it because nobody's concerned about the Crimson Tide losing this game. I don't know if everybody's just, yep, Alabama's going to cakewalk. They're going to crush them. It's just going to be embarrassing for the Noles, and they'll continue what was a 2-10 season from a year ago. But, man, if you're Florida State, you've got to be using that to your advantage and being like, ain't nobody picking us. Use it as the, quote, bulletin board material, right? We hear that term so often. But it's like, you've got to feel disrespected if you're Florida State, which you did it to yourself last year, sure. But any chance that Alabama doesn't come out of this alive? I mean, what happens? What if Alabama goes down and trips up game one of the season in a year where Alabama fans have already put a bunch of expectations on Kalen DeBoer? It's playoff or bust for him in year two in Tuscaloosa, because if he doesn't, they're already going to ask for him to be fired. I don't know if they'll go that route because you got to pay the man, but that's where Alabama fans seem to be. You trip up on the road against Florida State, that home game against Wisconsin gets a whole lot trickier. That game on the road at Georgia becomes a whole lot more important. and so does every other game in your conference schedule. Because Alabama, I'll just go ahead and tell you this, they're not going undefeated in the SEC. It's just not going to happen, not this year, with that schedule, which is tougher than it's been in the past, and a team that I don't know if they're as good as they've been in the past. They just lost their starting running back last week, so they got to get that figured out. Clearly, there's not overbounding or overbearing confidence in the quarterback room just yet with Alabama. And who are their dudes on defense that are going to step up and be the guys that we know to be every single year? You go to Georgia, home for Vandy, to Missouri, home for Tennessee, to South Carolina, home for LSU, home for Oklahoma, and at Auburn. You're not going undefeated in that schedule. So you can't afford to trip up against Florida State or Wisconsin if the Crimson Tide want to make it back to the college football playoff.
We had the fun conversation a couple weeks ago about the different the difference in comparison to the fan bases. If it's a 21-17, Alabama has the lead, but Florida State's driving halfway through the fourth quarter.
Oh, they're stressed.
And if Florida State's more happy or if Alabama fans are more stressed, and you feel like it puts even more pressure on Alabama and Kalen DeBoer for this game simply because there's not that fallback security blanket of, maybe we are a little bit worried. Maybe we should be a little bit worried. Right now, you're not hearing about that. And so you feel like if they don't come out and perform and cover the 14 or the 13 and a half point spread, even if it's a 3-point win, much less a 3-point loss or a touchdown loss, there's no security blanket of, okay, well, we maybe had our hopes of this season or this game not going the way that we wanted, could add that much more pressure and make it hurt that much more. Make it hurt that much more and add just that much pressure to the rest of the season.
And this is where, if you're Florida State, man, you got to call out your fan base and make this a tough atmosphere.
Yes.
You've got to make this a tough road game. Make
Hopefully
this...
their construction is done so they can actually fill up. Was there actually construction? I know that there was a little bit.
I think there was a little. I don't
but you know
think
how
it
they,
was.
They put basically all of the Florida State logo on the top half of the lower
bowl. I don't know
bowl.
If all that was real it or was, if it was going to be for a game like this. I don't think so.
But just funny enough that there was like, oh, you don't sit there. Yeah. So that way when the camera pans, it looks full.
Right. I mean, every stadium does it at some point. But I just, if you're Florida State, yeah, again, your fans have to show up. Make this one of those tough road games and road atmospheres that we've seen in Tallahassee in years past. I think about some of those games that Clemson went to play in Tallahassee. Like, it's a tough place to play when the fans show up and the team is playing well. It's a tough environment. We've seen Clemson go in there and lose, Miami go in there and lose, any other ACC team. I mean, Florida, like, that's a tough place to play when they care. You've got to come out and do that in game one because we've already seen an Alabama coach or a Kalen DeBoer coached Alabama team have silly mistakes, make those dumb plays, and lose football games that they're not supposed to. You can make an argument. All three of their losses last year were because of that. Dumb mistakes in the Vanderbilt game got you beat 40-35. Dumb mistakes got you beat on the road against Tennessee 24-17. And then just a lack of game plan and preparation against Oklahoma where you got embarrassed in Norman.
This and then isn't you throw the Michigan game in there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this isn't Nick Saban. You can't just rely on him to get you out of it. Kalen DeBoer is a great coach. That's a dude that's gone to the national championship game. But this one just has a weird feeling to me. There's an eerie level of confidence from Bama fans and the lack of coverage of this game that just has me feeling really weird about it.
You mentioned not having Nick Saban. That was the very first comment that Tommy Castellanos said. Again, the former Boston College, now Florida State quarterback, says, quote, "They don't have Nick Saban. I just don't see them stopping me." That's what he said in June of 2025. He even followed that up here just a couple of weeks ago, saying, "I stand on what I said," going back to those comments, and then tripled down on it again here last week, saying, "Yeah, I don't mean any disrespect to none of those guys at Alabama. I just have the confidence in my guys and the work that we've been putting in." He said that at the ACC kickoff in late July. And so, I mean, he definitely feels confident. The Alabama fans feel confident. And, man, this is going to be a very, very fun game on 2:30 or on Saturday at 2:30.
Yep, we'll definitely be talking about that more. Make our official picks on Friday as well for all of the Game 1 games, or Week 1 games, for the SEC coming up as the day and week goes on. All right, we'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's been a great show today, man. We have had a lot of fun talking football, a little bit of basketball, high school football, national championship football with the head coach Tommy Tuberville interview as well. And so if you missed any of it, we did a Baylor preview today. We just kind of did some Alabama-Florida State preview just now. We did have an interview with Coach Tommy Tuberville, Senator Tommy Tuberville, and a whole lot more. And so if you missed any of it, again, go check out the podcast version of the show here on this Tuesday afternoon at ESPNAU.com. Again, do want to remind you, a little cross promotion here over on our sister station, News Talk WANI. That's 98.7 FM, 1400 AM. If you are an Opelika citizen, you don't have to be one to listen, but it's a show that directly impacts you. It's election day in the city of Opelika for the mayoral race, all the wards, ward 1 through 5. And so if you're looking to get the results, get a little coverage of that, hear from some special guests as well. Our man Ben Taylor and Riley Hubbard are going to be on the air from 7 to 9 on News Talk WANI 98.7 FM, 1400 AM for their exclusive Opelika City election coverage. So be sure you check that out. If you're listening on the Radio Alabama app, you can just click out of ESPN, click on News Talk WANI, and it'll take you right there. And so tune in for that tonight. And then coming up on tomorrow's show, tomorrow is Wednesday, which means we get Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, get his deep, in-depth analysis of Georgia and Marshall. Looking forward to that one. No, we are looking forward to talking with Jordan about fall camp recap and kind of what the season holds, and maybe some predictions and things in there as well. And then tomorrow,
we don't
have Daryl. Man, that just hit me. That hurts. Oh, that hurts. In case you weren't with us last week, Daryl Dapperich is traveling for work, and then we'll be heading to Waco. So we do not have Daryl tomorrow. So that means we got to come up with something. How do we fill 30 minutes of void of no Daryl Dapperich?
You really can't. We might have to just sit here in silence.
Tomorrow may just be a one-hour show.
It might.
Yeah. We may just have to kick it to ESPN programming at 3 o'clock and just go home early. Nah, we'll find something good to talk about. Find another game.
We still got to make our playoff predictions, our championship contenders and winners and everything. So
tomorrow might be a good day to do that, yeah, because Friday is going to be so full of Auburn-Baylor.
Yes.
Tomorrow might be a good day to do that in the second hour. So I guess you'll just have to tune in and find out, because clearly we don't know what we're doing. So come on in and check it out on a whatever can happen Wednesday. So that's tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.